Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all in chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the Ides of January, Anno Domini 2022. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. And you can give us a call, by the way, at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. This was one of my favorite stories this week. For years, printers have been encumbered with DRM, digital restriction management, that prevent users from buying third-party ink and toner cartridges.
Mm-hmm.
Printer companies have claimed that their chip-enabled cartridges can enhance the quality and performance of their equipment, and provide the best customer experience, and protect the printers from counterfeit and third-party ink cartridges. Left unsaid is the fact that requiring first-party cartridges also ensures a recurring revenue stream. It's an old business model. Lexmark, HP, Canon, Brother, and all others effectively require users to purchase first-party ink and toner. It's basically the Gillette razor
BS
idea, right? To enforce the use of first-party cartridges, manufacturers typically embed chips inside the consumables for the printer to authenticate. But when chips are in short supply, like these days, manufacturers can find themselves in a bind. So Canon is now telling its German customers, not its American customers, you understand.
Of course.
It's German customers how to defeat its printers' warnings about third-party cartridges, mainly because they're now manufacturing cartridges without the chip.
Duh.
The chip in question tells the printer that when toner levels are getting low, that's the point of the chip. A useful feature, certainly, but one that printer companies often use to lock out third-party cartridges. Without the chip, the printer will say it doesn't know how much ink or toner is inside the cartridge, assume it's zero, and refuse to print. But Canon has been having a hard time getting chips amid the shortage. So the company is telling owners of its image runner large office printers how to defeat its own protection against cartridges that don't have chips. The software on these printers comes with a relatively simple way to defeat the chip checks. Depending on the model, when an error message occurs after inserting a toner, users can either press I agree, close, or OK. And
that's
when
rough.
Users press that button, the world does not end. Rather, Canon says users may find their toner cartridge doesn't give them a low warning before going empty. Although there are no negative effects on print quality when consumables are used without electronic components, certain additional functions, such as the detection of the toner level, may be impaired, says Canon's support site. Assuming these chip shortages continue, expect to see these instructions coming out for other companies' printers as well, and for more companies in more countries, and eventually, maybe even the United States. Although if you've got one of those printers, that works here too.
Mm-hmm.
So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is does your printer require manufacturer-only cartridges? Your choices are yes, and I hate it. Yes, and I don't mind paying more. I have no idea. Nope. Who prints anything anymore? And other. So far, we've got 24 votes. Nope is number one. And if you have, and we'd love you to vote as well. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Up in the upper left corner, you will see the, hello. What seems to be happening here? Okay. Up in the upper left, you will see the latest poll. Does your printer require manufacturer-only cartridges? And once you take the poll, particularly if you said other, you may have something else to say. So still on soundbites.org, Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You'll see the forums. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number one item under poll discussion is 15 Jan 22. Does your printer require manufacturer-only cartridges? So far, we've got four
replies
to that poll, and we'd love you to have us join us there. And also, of course, we would love to have you give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
It's too cold to go outside and do anything else. Why wouldn't they be listening?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, the DRM was basically in response to users, and a whole industry popped up on refilling cartridges.
Yeah. Right.
And so the manufacturers put the chip in to said the cartridge was empty, no matter if you refilled it or not.
Right.
The chip still said it was empty.
Yep, the chip would reset to zero, and even though you would get those... like syringes. They look like syringes. You'd sit there and put it through the top of the cartridge and slowly tell you how much to put in there and fill it.
Or if you had a toner that didn't have the chip.
Yeah.
It assumes if it doesn't see the chip that there's no toner or no ink.
Yep.
Now, I have a brother printer that does not have DRM. I have used third-party cartridges, toner cartridges, for... 3 years, 4 years, they all work perfectly.
There is a trick we've run into with the brother is that they have an optical sensor for when your toner's out, and it's what's the word I want? It's not really out when it says it's out.
Oh yeah.
So we just
mine said it was out in the, for the last month and a half.
Yeah,
yeah.
So we just put some black tape over the sensor so the light can't get through, and so it never knows it's out. So we can tell it's out when it's. Not printing.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's the
And you take
obvious.
It out, you shake it up, you get another, you know, 50, 100 prints out of it while you order your next cartridge.
Well, that's even like on the inkjet ones, you know? I mean, you could obviously tell when the ink is out, when you're going to print a letter, and all of a sudden the top is fairly dark, and then all of a sudden goes down halfway, gets lighter, down to the bottom, and there's nothing.
Yep.
Gee, well, somebody maybe worked. I need an ink cartridge.
Somebody worked out the math once years ago. I remember reading that the ink tanks you get are like half a milliliter.
Right, they're very, very,
very, very tiny. So $20 for half a milliliter, and you complain about it's $20. Somebody worked that out. That's about $4,000 a gallon.
Yep. Yep.
So if you can buy, you know,
if you could run your printer on gas, it would be much, much cheaper.
Much cheaper. Yep. And and so you'd go to the stationery store and you buy a bottle of ink for $10. And that would refill your cartridge 100 times.
Yeah, exactly right. And that's what they don't like.
Yep.
Yeah. They're making money on those consumables and right.
They've always said, they've been up front, they don't make their money on the printers. That's why you can buy the printers so cheap.
You can buy printers cheaper than you can buy the refill cartridge.
Yep. Yes.
And so now, now companies are advertising they have larger ink tanks. The Epson has this whole line of eco tanks. How much is they pay him? And they're still making money off these printers.
Yeah, exactly.
Where it actually comes with giant, big bottles of ink that you squeeze in, and basically you're refilling the cartridge yourself.
Right.
And it ends up costing you much less for ink.
Right.
Although ink still dries out, I still prefer color laser. For average stuff, liquid ink does better if you're doing photographs. That's about its only biggest thing. And if you're doing high quality photographs, liquid ink printers are great.
But if you're going to take it anywhere where there might be water, any sort of moisture,
forget it.
It's a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you don't print enough, it dries out. I got my wife one of those little Epson Photomate printers.
Oh yeah.
And she didn't print enough, and the cartridge dried out.
Yeah.
So I bought a new cartridge, which is half the cost of the printer, and she printed a few pages, didn't print enough again. It dried out again. I haven't bought her a replacement yet.
I get that.
She's always complaining about she doesn't have printed photos in her album.
You can't clean the head with alcohol?
The head doesn't come out.
Oh, it's what a
one of those
bummer.
You can't replace the head, just the tanks, So she's always complaining about not having printouts to make her photo albums. And every time I buy you ink, you let it dry out. I'm not going to buy you ink anymore.
Right.
It's called Staples.
You
should really want a dye sub printer.
Or go to CVS.
Well, those,
you can sit at one of those little kiosks and print whatever you want off.
Well, you can do it right in the photo program on your computer.
Right.
You can send your photos off. To get processed, like you used to do with your film.
Yeah.
And it just shows back up in the mail a few days later.
Right. So buy her a Dysub printer.
Yeah.
How many thousands of dollars is that?
When I worked at Kodak, I worked on the approval printing system. And so this $200,000 machine was the thing you printed your proofs on before it went to the $1 million press.
Right.
But it was, in essence, a Dysub printer. It was 1,800 DPI, 17 by 22 paper size. It had six rolls of film that you would put into it. So you could have, it was a six color printer, so the regular CMYK, and you could have two custom colors. It was beautiful. And that was always my lottery money.
Yeah.
When I win the lottery.
It was about the length of this room, though.
Yeah, back in the day.
And we were working on the computer interface because it plugged into color publishing systems. The computer interface, this was 30 years ago, too, was an AIX Unix computer that was about 50 grand by itself to take the PostScript your computer was putting out and feed it into the CES.
Back when the first Epson had their first 1200 DPI printer.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were 300, a few were 600.
Yep.
They printed this great ad, and it was a woman running. And it said, at 300 DPI, it's a woman in a swimsuit. At 600 DPI, you can see that the swimsuit is wet. At 1200 DPI, you can see that the swimsuit is painted on. The most effective, we had people bring that ad in because they wanted that printer.
Or that model.
Or the model. I don't know about that. We had the printer.
I want this model printer.
Yeah. Yeah. We did sell the printer. That's what we sold. All right. To the phones. Our first caller is Mike from Greece, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up?
It's Mark.
I thought I put down Mark.
Who is it?
Never mind. Mark.
It's Mark.
It's who?
Mark.
Oh, it's Mark.
Anyways, I've got an Epson printer, and I buy third-party cartridges, and what I had to do is I had to download a old firmware to reset it, and then I don't update the firmware anymore, and it prints fine with third-party cartridges.
Oh, nice. Sure, yep. before they activated the sensor.
Yep.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yep, and then I get them at a third of the price.
Yeah, exactly.
And I've never had a single problem with any cartridges, and I only buy from the ones on Amazon that will guarantee their cartridges, and if there's something wrong, if they leak, or they will take them back.
Yeah, just like any product, there are the ones that are too cheap and they're really crappy. And it shouldn't use them, and especially with liquid ink, but even with powdered toner, it could mess up the inside of your printer really bad.
Right.
Yeah. You if they're too cheap, don't buy them. But
yeah.
I get it's a five pack because I have five cartridges.
Right.
And they cost me about $22 compared to $50, $60, depending on the day.
Right.
Sometimes the price goes up, it fluctuates all the time.
Right. Right.
So,
if this chip shortage lasts significantly longer, we're going to see more and more companies putting out new firmware that say, update your printer and it'll ignore the sensor.
Because we can't make any new cartridges with chips anymore.
That's exactly right. I have been buying cartridges from a company called Arthur Imaging. I generally get them via Amazon because they get delivered to my door and I'm old and lazy. But I usually buy the ones from Arthur. And I have, like I said, in years, I've used it for the last three printers, as a matter of fact. I have never had a problem. And I can get the ones that are high capacity.
Yep.
More toner.
That high capacity ones. They're the best.
Yeah. Yeah.
They last the longest, and I've never had a problem either. And setting back that firmware, I still get a warning when my ink is running low.
Oh, nice.
That's probably the computer reading the ink level. not the chip telling the software.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Yep.
So that, and I get it on the front display of the printer too. I can go in and I can go to where it says setup and it says ink levels and it tells me right on the display on the printer too.
Right. Right. I have the same thing. Exactly.
Yep. So, you know, like I said, you can buy third parties if you're, you know, if you can find a way for your printer to use them. Just don't buy the super cheap ones.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. Well, Janet, Janet on the YouTube chat says, I used to work at the HP Repair Center. We got lots of printers drenched in ink because the refill cartridges exploded. Those printers had to be scrapped. That's right. One of the problems with refilling a cartridge is if you don't know what you're doing, you can really have a serious problem.
Especially since the cartridges aren't designed to be refilled.
Right.
You basically have to drill a hole, fill the ink tank, and then fill the hole back in again.
Yeah. Right. That's the part people miss.
Yeah.
To fill the hole back in again.
Yep.
Right. Oh, and by the way, even though this has its own built-in print head, you know, that's how Epson does it with those ink tanks.
Yeah.
If I find that it's starting to print funky, I take the cartridges out, and I use a cotton swab and alcohol, and I get in there, and I clean it, and I clean it, and I clean it. And sometimes it takes, you know, several times.
Yeah.
But it does work better than letting this machine just run and try to clean itself and use every bit of ink.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
And then what people don't realize, when it does that, it fills the pad underneath, and then the printer stops working.
Exactly.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks.
You're welcome, guys.
Yep. Janet's avatar seems to be the Ubuntu symbol. Nicely done, Janet.
I remember one time I was buying a toner cartridge on Amazon and it was eBay. In the early days when eBay was where you bought your stuff. There was two toner cartridges, you know, half the price I was used to. It was coming from Georgia. There were, you know, a minute left in the auction. Oh, okay, bye. And then I'm reading the details. It was Soviet Georgia. And they show up 3 weeks later, and they were opened, and I'll cut open the box, and there's just powder everywhere inside the box.
Yeah.
And so I write to the seller, and I say, so?
Yeah, exactly. What are you going to do? I'm in Russia.
Yeah.
Come get me.
Yep.
Right. And of course, there's no extradition, and there's nobody who's going to help you. Don't buy from eBay. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Steve from Webster, New York. Hiya, Steve. What's up?
Hi, it's kind of a lengthy explanation here, but I got a Toshiba laptop, and on Saturday, this last previous Saturday, I had a problem hooking up my computer to the printer through Wi-Fi. So I have a $134 a year plan through Microsoft for the Virus Defender, and they also help with support. With no charge. So I talked to three different techs through the remote sessions. They couldn't figure out how to fix the problem. I finally found out the problem by contacting HP, which is my printer. It was a button on my Netgear R6400 Wi-Fi. It's right on top, and I remember seeing my cat on the desk. My cat must have hit the Wi-Fi button. But, so, then the problem was the computer wouldn't shut off. You know, you go through the regular...
Sure.
And you still see the fan running, and you still see the computer, you know, humming along. So, I looked up on the internet, why is the problem, what's going on? And they said, well, it could be a host of problems.
Yeah. Well, it's Windows, yeah.
So I contacted Microsoft again. It's helpmicrosoft.com. The computer wizard in Brighton says it sounds like a scam to him, but do you guys understand what I'm talking about when I say I pay the Microsoft people $134 a year for the virus?
No, because it's completely free, and there is no subscription charge for...
Yeah. And the thing
from Microsoft.
And the thing of it is, though, is quite often Windows is dumb because they don't handle memory good or very well, I should say. They never have since Windows 95. And you go to shut it down, and it hangs up because it doesn't know how to turn things off, and it's still thinking things. And if you wait usually about 5 minutes or so, and it hasn't shut down, turn it off.
That's what I was doing.
Yeah, and then you turn it back on, and then it will usually start back up correctly.
But something is happening to make it not turn
right.
off.
Right, and the thing of it is, though, is I would recommend, because there are still viruses, but we recommend two programs, Super Anti-Spyware and Malware Bytes.
It's malicious software, malware, is much more common than viruses anyway.
And running, it's probably running in the background, and it's taking up resources and locking up your machine. So if you run those two free programs, if you go to the Security Tango and download those programs and do the tango, do the dance, that should clean up your machine.
I would also run an antivirus program because there are so many antivirus programs still out there.
Right. Mm-hmm. And Windows Defender isn't bad.
Before we get too far into the virus thing, I can't do anything with the computer because it wouldn't shut down. I asked them to restore my system prior to when they started fiddling around with it, and they said they can do that. So we picked the day.
All right, tell you what, we got to take a break for a minute. When we come back, I've got a couple other suggestions before you do that, okay?
Stay on the line.
Okay.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, with Steve from Webster, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Don't go too far, because we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Okay, everybody sit down again. Welcome back. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we still have Steve from Webster on the line, do we?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, Steve, one thing, what version of Windows are you running?
10 and supposedly non-S mode.
Okay. All right. What I would recommend is go, we were talking it over here when we were off here, is trying to do a system, a restore point, system restore. If you go down into that little white box next to the
No. They put me into a system restore yesterday at 7 o'clock in the morning. 7 o'clock in the morning today, it was still running. So I thought maybe the screen froze, so I shut the computer off for 20 minutes,
mm-hmm.
turned it back on, and for the last 4 hours, all I have is a black screen that says Toshiba, and the five dots going round and round in a circle, and it says preparing automatic repair. And I was wondering if there's like an escape button.
No. If that doesn't...
Yeah, it sounds like you're at the point where you have to erase and reinstall Windows.
Yeah. Quite often, since that's Windows 10, if you shut it off and turn it back on and hit the F12 button when it's booting, that will get you into a point where you can then go into reinstalling Windows over Windows.
So...
if you're not comfortable with this, and you've got data on there that you might not have backed up, I would suggest taking it into a repair place.
All right, because just shutting it off and turning it back on won't.
Yeah, if you're not,
it should. That should recognize that something isn't booting right and take you into startup repair.
Yeah. But it should not take that long to do
that.
Yeah,
that should be like a 10-minute thing.
Yeah, not even if it was a 2-terabyte hard drive, wouldn't take overnight to do that.
Right. You really need to take it to a reputable dealer and have them take a look at it. I'm sorry, Steve.
Yeah, that's the short end of it. Sorry, I wish we had better news, but it could be even you might have a bad hard drive in it. It might have some bad sectors in it, and that, who knows? But that, as far as that Windows Defender, I wouldn't rely on that. I mean, we've been talking about it here too. Is there are so many third-party programs that we recommend, you know, like AVG or for, you know, antivirus, and say malware, bytes, and super anti-spyware. If you were to, you know, once you get back up and running, go to the Security Tango website, and we've got a whole host of recommendations there to keep put on your machine, like Revo One installer and all this, to keep your machine up, running, clean, and malware safe. Malware and spyware, because those are the big two culprits nowadays. I mean, there are still some viruses, but they're not as prevalent as the malware and spyware, because it's a world now where these folks are out there with spyware and malware trying to steal your, even a simple thing like your emails, your email address book, something innocent like that, so they can turn around and sell it to other spammers. That's where they're making their money. So, yeah, I would definitely take it into a professional and have them check it out for you.
All right, because, yeah, the only reason I got that $134 plan is because I was always hitting something that I wasn't supposed to and not on my computer.
Yeah, and, but I would have...
We're pretty sure that is not Microsoft.
Yeah.
Microsoft does... The Windows Defender is free. There is an enterprise-class version called Windows Defender Endpoint that's available as part of Microsoft 365, which is $32 per user per month for enterprises. That shouldn't be available to end users, and it doesn't sound like it's the right price either.
Yeah, and the other thing, though, Steve, is if you take it into a local shop, now you're setting up and building a rapport that if you've got, say, a question, you can call them. You've got somebody local that you can look in the face and say, hey, I'm having this issue. They'll know your machine.
Well, I got Jeff's computers right here.
There you go. Yeah, Jeff is a good guy. I know him way back when he first started out. He came and we had a long talk.
But, yeah, the only thing is I didn't want to bother him. That's why I got that. If you could just do me a favor, can you punch in on your computer help.microsoft.com?
Yeah, it takes you to support.microsoft.com. If it didn't do that, it's a fake.
No, that's what I'm dealing with.
But they don't charge you, is the thing. So why you're getting charged and who exactly is charging you is a very concerning question.
Yeah, it could have gone to a fake website that looked as official as all get out. Unless you check that web address up at the top.
When you paid that subscription.
Yeah, otherwise it could look so much like a Windows professional web page that you'd swear to it if you were in court. Yes,
yeah,
Sagan.
There are files that can be put on your machine that when you type in help.microsoft.com, it takes you somewhere entirely else. But look, Steve, I'm sorry, but you need to take it to a reputable vendor. Jeff's is great, and we have to move on. I'm sorry.
Okay, no, thank you so much.
Good luck. Good luck. Yeah,
I was working with a customer for a problem on their Microsoft Office product key, and you get in the help queue, and they'd started a new thing where they'll call you back. Oh, that's nice. Instead of you waiting on hold forever, but then they called back, and I was with another customer and couldn't answer right away.
Yeah, the assumption is that you are just sitting there doing nothing, waiting for them.
Yep.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Don from Pittsford, New York. Hiya, Don. What's up?
Well, actually, it's what's down. My PC, I installed a Windows update, and I'm operating a relatively new desktop PC, Windows 10, and that installation did not totally complete it. I got a notice that said that there was an error and it was going to be uninstalled. And that took forever with the circling dots. And ever since, this was 3 days ago, I have no internet connection, I have no sound card, and I have various other, a few Windows applications, Windows functions that don't work. And I've tried to back out this update. I have the nomenclature on it if it would help. I've tried to back it out and uninstall it. The computer then shuts down, restarts, and it goes through the same cycle every time, which I can't kill. Installs that update, says it can't be completed, and therefore here we are. Can you help me?
Again, just like our previous caller, I would go to the system restore points and pick up date, because it'll show you the first one, the last known update. And then over to the right of that screen, there's a select more dates. You push on that, and it'll show you a few more dates. What you want to do is pick a date, a restore point, that is the day before you did that update.
Can you enter an actual date?
No, it'll show you, because it knows.
You have to pick it from the list.
You have to pick it from the list, because Windows periodically picks points that it will do restore points. So what you want to do is pick one of those restore points that was before the update.
Of course.
And select that. It'll say, you sure you want to do this? You say, yeah. It'll go ahead. It'll take, you know, you get a blue, light blue screen, and it'll say, okay, we're restoring back to this point. It will then go ahead and do that. It'll take some time. It will then restart, and then Windows should start back up.
Okay. Another question regarding how this particular update appeared. As a small window, the lower right-hand corner of the screen, and it's, I get these probably once every 2 or 3 weeks, and you have two choices. One is, say, leave your computer on, pick a date and time in the future for updates to occur, or update now.
Right.
I generally ignore that because I prefer to have the updates run directly from Windows automatically or by manual control.
Well, that's what it's doing, but it needs to restart the computer, and so it wants to know if I can restart now or you've got to set a time when I can restart.
And I chose this time restart now, and it went through, as I've described, trying to put on this update, but unable to complete it, and said there's a problem, malfunction, we have to uninstall, and then the cycle just kept going and going.
See, that's where I usually turn the updates off.
Well, I was about to suggest that's the
turn the updates off, and then wait a little bit. Because you can always go back. I don't like to be the pioneer, because that's what the guys with the arrows in their back. Let the updates come out and see how much other damage it does to other people. Because Microsoft is well noted for throwing it out there and it bricks the machines. So I sit there and say, no, let me choose. And I'll wait until the updates are done and they're working okay and turn it off and, you know, update it when I want it to and I know it's safe.
Well, we have at least put the updates on pause for a week or two, but we stopped the updates as well.
Well, if you go to our webpage, Steve is putting up a link that will point you to how to go in and turn off updates.
Well, I would love to get to that link, but I have no internet connection.
Well, do you have a cell phone?
No, but I do have two other computers.
There you go. That's all you need to do.
Working.
And it can walk you through it.
And incidentally, these two office computers are Ethernet hardwired. We're not operating on Wi-Fi, but the router is indeed working both hardwire and Wi-Fi. So that's not a problem.
Right. One of the issues that you're going to have is that. Well, we're already at the point where Windows 10 support is scarce.
Really?
And getting scarcer. So you machines that are running Windows 10 that have problems, we're already seeing places are taking down their drivers for Windows 10. They're taking down.
Because you need to have the 2021 H2.
Yeah.
So if your Windows...
They want to push Windows 11.
Yeah, because they're pushing Windows 11. So only the latest version or two of Windows 10 is supported for the, that have come out in the last 6 months or so.
Right.
Well, this this update read Windows 10 version 20H2 for X64 and then gave a KB nomenclature.
Right.
And that's the, that was the latest one. The previous one was installed December 16.
Right.
I've had no problems with installations prior to that date. Tell me again, what is the website, Steve, that I should... go to on another computer to get your good instructions?
Soundbites.org. And when you go there, you'll see in the middle of the page a list of posts. One of them, Steve just put up a new post that tells you how to stop automatic updates on Windows 10. It's the third one down.
Okay.
Currently.
Okay, I think we've done that already, but I'll check it out. And in terms of a go back position, if you would tell me again how to get to not go back, but to a
restore point. What you're going to do is right next to this menu button is a little white window. You type in system restore. And that'll bring up a bunch of menu selections, and you just say, you'll see it there, system restore, click on it, and it'll open up a window, and it'll see you a restore point. And below that, in the lower right-hand corner, is more dates. Select that, and it'll show you a whole calendar of dates that you can pick from, and you want to pick the date prior to this install.
Yes, of course.
And there's also a link... below that last one called Recovery Options in Windows that talks about restoring from a restore point.
So we got both links there for you.
All right. Great. Have you guys heard of this problem before?
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
Nothing new. Done there, been there, did it.
Do you feel now that Windows 11 is advisable to go to, or are there still too many bugs?
Yep.
It depends on your machine.
Yeah.
If you're running an old machine, probably Windows 11 is not your best bet.
Stay with 10.
But for any newer machine, say in the last year, Windows 11 is probably a better bet. But the problem with Windows in general is there are so many things that can go wrong. Depends on your video card, depends on your network card, mm-hmm. depends on your printer, it depends, you know, there's a billion
multitude
things,
of
but
issues.
Just in general, if your machine is a year old or less, Windows 11 is a better choice. In general, if your machine is a year old or more, Windows 10 is probably something you should stay with. But again, you're going to find that as time goes on, there will be less and less support available for Windows 10.
Sure. Okay.
It's not going to end tomorrow. Probably within the next 5 years, I would say.
Well, we're already seeing people taking down... Microsoft is taking down support documents and files.
But I'm saying even the updates will slowly trickle off within the next 5 years.
Right.
You'll see it to where they'll sit there and say, sorry, no more.
5 years is, I think, generous.
The current end of life is October 2025. Which is 3 years.
All right, 3 years. I was guessing.
Yeah. 2025 sounds so far in the future, doesn't it?
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, probably if a computer is 5 years old or older, it's maybe time to buy a new one.
That's true. That's very true.
And you might even take the opportunity to look at OSs other than Windows.
Yep, yeah.
Yep.
All right, we got to move on.
Okay, for sure.
Thanks, Don. Bye-bye.
Gentlemen, thank you.
Yeah, if you're going to change anyway, you might as well look around and see what better options there might be.
Victor, where are you coming from?
In fact, for a lot of people, we have talked about a Chromebook is all they need because all they're doing is going on the websites and looking at email.
That's exactly right. And for that, you don't need $1,000 worth of computer. You can do it with a Chromebook and see whatever you need to see there. All right, our next caller is Victor from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Victor. What's up?
Well, hi, Nick. Tuesday, Microsoft said that I violated their service agreement and they locked my email account. Well, that immediately sent me into a panic because, like everybody else, I pay all the bills, you know, gas and electric, credit card, et cetera, on there. So I'm thinking, what if I can't get on? What's going to happen now? So I end up calling a friend, and it took several days, and he got it back on. But I'm looking at their service agreement, and it's very, very vague. The only thing I could think of is what I possibly did is I get jokes from a couple of people, and I forward them to anywhere between 20 and 30 of my friends. And I don't ever send any videos because I don't know what's embedded in them.
Right.
And I haven't had any problem. But all of a sudden, when it was locked out, I mean, it's never happened before. But my question is, on one of your spam tips, it said don't send stuff to too many people. Well, what number is too many people? 1, 5, 10, 50? I mean, they're very vague, so I don't know who to send the jokes to.
Well, it depends on your email service provider. What's your email provider?
Hotmail. Outlook.
Yeah. While Steve is looking that up, what Victor's talking about for everybody else is that there is so much spam going around these days, and there are so many free accounts that people are using to send spam that, in general, they set a limit as to the number of people you can send to either in an individual email or within a certain amount of time in an attempt to cut down on the amount of spam that goes out. That's why systems like MailChimp and MailerLite and things like that, mailing systems, have become so popular. I use MailerLite to send out the Ask Nick newsletter every week. So that people know that it's coming. It's obviously opt-in because you have to pay for it. And it's opt-out. There's always an unsubscribe button and blah, 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 blah. And several times I've had companies say to me, you've been blocked for spam. And then all I have to do is say, here's the deal. Look at how you get on the list. You pay for it. Look at the fact that there's an unsubscribe button. Look at the fact that I have a GDR, what are they called?
GDPR.
GDPR link and everything else. And then they spam me. However that.
Do you subscribe to Microsoft 365?
The only thing I subscribed to is this thing I did years ago, and I'm grandfathered. It's $19.95 a year to add more space in the email, so I use it as storage.
All right. So it looks like
Microsoft Premium.
The regular free Hotmail is 100 recipients per message and 300 recipients per day. If you subscribe to Office 365, then it's 5,000 per day and 500 per message.
You know what, Steve? I could have sent maybe, I'm just thinking now, I might have sent a couple jokes out, or maybe four or five jokes in one day. And they took it as me being a major spammer.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's okay, always so possible.
It does say they're supposed to, they temporarily limit you to 10 recipients per message. But if they cut you off completely.
You must have a lot of people on your joke list.
Or it wasn't you. It was someone using your return address.
Set it up. Set up so a Gmail account. That's probably, set them that way.
Well,
I did. I did that after.
Yeah. Gmail has their own limits. But it's much more likely. Gmail is 500 messages a day, unless you subscribe to their service, then it's 2,000.
But what I did was I set it up through my Gmail account. I added my Hotmail account.
Yep.
Which is really nice. I didn't know you could do that. But
yeah.
What was much more likely is that someone was using your return address to send out spam, and Microsoft got too many automatic or angry responses for mail coming from your address, even though it wasn't really you doing it. Yep. It's like postal envelopes. You can put anybody's return address on an envelope. That doesn't mean it really came from them.
Right.
That's true.
And in addition, if they've sent it to a bunch of people who reject it or addresses that no longer exist, then they assume you're on some sort of robotic
list. Or they reported it as spam.
Right.
Ah, okay. It's possible. These are all my friends. It's not, and the jokes I send are tasteful, most of them, you know, so. Well, Nick, I signed up for Ask Nick last week. When do I start getting my newsletters?
Every Sunday.
Oh, every Sunday. Okay, great.
So tomorrow.
All right, beautiful. I'll be looking forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, a lot of times you can tell if a spammer is using your return address because you start getting bounce errors and you start getting angry messages about take me off your list for a message you never sent.
Yep.
Because somebody else sent it in your name. Lucky you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's just, you got to be cautious. I mean, that's why I say, you know, protecting your system with the programs that we recommend on the Security Tango, for the most part, will keep that spyware and malware off your machine because that's the biggie nowadays. You know, they're trying to steal your stuff, your personal information, even me, email address.
Well, I will say that I use MailerLite to send out the Ask Nick newsletter at AskNick from AskNick.com. And I can send 12,000 a month for free. So if you're sending jokes to more than 12,000 people a month, you probably should be paying for some sort of service. All right, we're going to take the first hour of this show is done. We're going to take a slightly longer break. But we will be back with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. We're going to take a bio break, but we'll be back with a whole lot more Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 8 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Before you talk, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
Since we're on the, you know, topic of recommending different programs to do things and everything else, keeping your machine clean and everything else, and it turns out I talked to Steve. He uses it, too. I was telling Nick, if you accidentally delete, say, some files, you know, and you're trying, how the heck do I get them back? Or here's one I'm sure a number of folks have happened. You get a flash drive. You plug it into the machine, and it says, wait a minute, there's nothing on here. I want to format it. And you're going, no, there's files on there. Well, I was past few days looking at various programs, and I recommend this one. It's called Disk Drill. That's D-I-S-K space D-R-I-L-L. It's a great program, and here's the reason I liked it. I tried, Unzip. Supposedly they had a recovery one, and sure, they run through the program and they show you all the files it found, and you say, okay, well, recover a couple. And it says, no, wait a minute, you gotta first sign up and pay this fee. Heck no. So I tried out this disk drill because it was very well recommended, and it's got some great features that it'll show you photos versus videos, documents, and other documentation on how they're recording them. You know, what they found as far as totals. So you could select, if I only wanted JPEGs or, you know, say documents or this. So going back to the USB drive, you could put the USB drive in, select it. It will then search that USB drive, grab those photos or documents or whatever you had back, you know, on that, copy them off to a folder on your computer. You can then format the flash drive and put them back. And it's well worth it. It's like $89 for the program. But, you know, if you've accidentally...
Lifetime. That's one payment. A lot of the other recovery programs, you pay per year. Or, even worse, you pay per computer.
No, it's... Well, it's $89. Well,
right, Disk Drill is $89 for a lifetime license.
Plus, no, lifetime updates is $29 more.
Maybe that's the pro version.
No, is it? I just got it. Well, I wound up getting unlimited updates.
I believe $89 is a lifetime subscription to own that program.
Yeah.
But the other $29 is to get updates for life.
Yeah, that's what I wound up doing because I figured, you know,
instead of paying $89 at the end in a couple of years to get the new version.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, this was originally a Mac program, but there's also a version for Windows.
Yeah, both.
Yeah,
and it works with SD cards, and
there is a free trial, so you can download it and see if it can find your files before you pay for it.
That's the thing. That's what I was getting to. Is unlike Unzip, it says, okay, we'll tell you what, we'll give you 500 meg free to try it out. I mean, not many programs do that,
right?
So you could go in there just to see if this is really going to work for you, and grab a couple documents or a couple photos, save them off. And see how you like it. I mean, that is a great idea versus, oh, well, we found all these files, which a lot of the programs do. You go to use them and then say, sorry, before we even let you even look at anything or try to get it back, you got to pay us.
Right. It also has, by the way, an iPhone mode. So it'll save files off your iPhone.
What more can you ask for? But, yeah, I highly recommend it. It's a great program for you folks that accidentally, you know, delete a file that it didn't mean to and you emptied your trash. Well, it's still there as long as you haven't installed a lot of stuff over it.
I just never empty my trash.
Stop. Stop right now.
Oh.
Somebody out there is going to say, oh, and Steve says never empty your trash.
Oh.
Do not use the trash as a place to store files.
That's not a temp folder.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, I just figured I'd throw that in there. It's a great program since we're discussing other stuff. And again, super antispyware and malware bytes and a good virus program. Pay for the full versions if you really like them. If you're going to use them in that helps support the companies to keep the updates and everything else coming.
Right.
Highly recommend it, folks. And you'll be thankful in the end when it keeps your machine running clean. And the other one, too, is Revo Uninstaller. That's another one I swear to, because if you get a lot of programs on there and, oh, it's not what I liked, and you do, if you use the Microsoft Uninstaller, that just turns one bit off and your registry is still full of junk. From that program, use the Revo Uninstaller to do it, and it cleans out the registry and all the folders and that taking up space and mess on your hard drive.
I have seen registries that were 2 gigabytes.
I believe.
Gigabytes.
That. Yeah.
What? No wonder it takes so long to boot up Windows.
And the thing that is,
it's got to read a 2 gig file, sort through that, figure out what's real and what's no longer available, and then start up Windows. Yes, that takes forever.
And that can be just as simple, folks, from uninstalling, reinstalling a program, say 2-3 times.
Right.
If it's a big program, it's going to eat up a lot of space in your registry. And like Nick just said, it can make a mess.
Whereas if you delete all of that, you can get your registry down to a couple of 100 meg.
Running slim and
trim. Much less.
Yep.
Just a few meg.
Yep.
And then Windows will boot up faster and run cleaner.
A lot faster.
Yep. All right. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. In the meantime, I will read another news item. Looks like everybody patched everything this month. There are patches out for Windows, Office, Mac OS, and iOS. And
it's
many
a new
of them.
Year.
It's a new year. And many of them, and Windows up, Linux updated, Chromebooks, everybody updated. Microsoft released updates to plug nearly 120 security holes in Windows and their supported software. Six of the vulnerabilities were publicly detailed already, potentially giving attackers a head start in figuring out how to exploit them in unpatched systems. More concerning, Microsoft warns that one of the flaws fixed this month is wormable, meaning that no human interaction would be required for an attack to spread from one vulnerable Windows box to another. Microsoft also addressed a critical severity Office vulnerability that can let attackers execute malicious code remotely on vulnerable systems. Those of you using Office on the Mac will have to wait for a fix since Mac OS patches are still under construction. But yes, Office on the Mac is as susceptible as Office on Windows to all the same problems. They just don't fix it as quickly. Speaking of Microsoft and Mac OS, Microsoft actually discovered a vulnerability in Mac OS. The new PowerDir Mac OS vulnerability that let an attacker bypass the transparency, consent, and control technology to gain unauthorized access to protect data. The 12.1 update to Monterey fixed this. iOS wasn't neglected. Apple has released iOS 15.2.1, its latest update for recent iPhone and iPad devices. The patch addresses a vulnerability found within the company's HomeKit protocol for connecting disparate smart home devices. That vulnerability was announced at the beginning of the year, and the patch is now available. Be cautious about these updates, of course, particularly the Microsoft updates. And what comes as a surprise to no one, there are reports of the updates causing new problems as they fix old problems. Look, just buy a Chromebook. Have you updated yet? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
That's why I recommend turning off the updates and waiting a little bit. Not to not do them.
Right.
But
don't
do
be
them
first.
Once, yeah, do them once they correct the issues. Because like I say, for the most part, Microsoft is using you as a beta tester.
Right, because they don't do their own beta testing anymore.
No.
And no matter how many people outside of Microsoft have signed up to be a beta tester, it's such a small...
All of them.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, every window user.
Signed up knowingly to be a beta tester.
Oh, I see. On purpose.
Yeah. It's such a small percentage of actual Windows users that there are combinations of hardware and software that just will not be tested until they get to you.
Right, and the fact is that even waiting is no guarantee, because if you have some unique combination that nobody's reported yet, you can have a problem.
Yeah, the variations of motherboards, sound cards, video cards, other devices and versions of a motherboard.
Right. What we find in a lot of cases is that people have older peripherals, and they have drivers that are not updatable.
Printers.
Particularly for printers and sound cards and video cards.
Yep.
And if that happens, Microsoft will gladly just continue to try to use the old one, and often that is not viable. So that's an issue.
It can cause hiccups in that or hesitations in the machine, and that causes lockups.
Right. Speaking of Chromebooks, by the way, last week I mentioned that I taught a class on Mastermind Lounge on Chromebooks, and a couple of classes, and one of the people apparently told other people because they're signing up. Thank you, all of you. But what part of what I teach people is that what makes Chromebooks unique in the computer world is that every single time you turn them on, if they are connected to the internet, they check with Google to make sure that the version of Chrome OS they are running is clean. If it is, they boot. If it is not, they fix it. Then they boot. No other operating system does that.
Mm-mm.
So you are almost 100% guaranteed that you will have a clean version of the operating system every time you boot. And as I said, that is, to date at least, unique in the computer world. And I think it's a great feature. it makes it very, very difficult to subvert a Chromebook. We've talked about the pwn-to-own contest that they do every year where they set up very high-end versions of computers, and they offer all kinds of incentives to hackers to hack those machines.
Money and prizes.
Money and prizes. One of those prizes is always that high-end machine. You get the machine you hack first. If you're the first person to hack that machine. And Macs always fall. Windows machines always fall. Linux machines sometimes fall. Chromebooks have never fallen. Not ever. Okay. You can download, Lord knows people do this all the time and I don't know why. You can download toolbars to a Chromebook just like you can to any other operating system, to any other browser.
Dumb.
And those can be a problem.
Yeah.
However, when you reboot, those go away. They are removed. So the rule is it has to be a repeatable. It has to survive a reboot. Right? Because you can also get fake advertisements. That happened to me here one day. I got a giant red screen that said, there's a problem with your Windows system.
That was
click
great.
Click here.
That was great.
Right. And I'm on a Chromebook, so unlikely.
Yeah. And last year at the pwn-to-own competition, they awarded over $1.2 million for people who found these bugs. And so independent bug reporters are now becoming a viable business.
Yes.
Because there are bounties from all the companies for finding bugs. So you don't have to work for a big research team. You can be an independent researcher if you happen to find a good one yourself.
And wind up with employment. I mean, you could wind up or going to, like you said, go work for one of those companies and, you know, sit at home and be paid to find bugs in that.
And there are people who make a very
good living doing that. Very comfortable.
This year's CANSEC West is in May, which is usually where the pwn-to-own contest occurs. So if you're in Vancouver in May, you can show up and watch them typing away. Although, it is in person this year. So last year it was online only, which was really interesting. Because the participants would submit their exploits, and then the contest judges would execute them and see if they worked or not.
Right. Right. And it is pretty amazing to watch them do this. One of the winners in this last year was a Zoom exploit. A zero-click Zoom exploit. Pretty cool stuff. They have this contest every year. There are cash prizes as well as hardware that people win for finding bugs. And then they report those bugs to the companies. The companies fix them.
Yep.
So it's really quite a beautiful thing. It makes your systems safer. Yep.
And everyone gets points based on the severity of the exploit they found. Getting remote root privileges gives you the most points. And at the end of the show, they crown a master of pwn.
Yeah.
And last year, it was a three-way tie for first place.
Yep. All right, to the phones. The next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Hiya, James. What's up?
Oh, hello. I like your advice. What do you recommend for like a 5-year-old, either a mini iPad or a Chromebook, to basically just watch children's things and surf around a little bit?
I would suggest the iPad, personally.
Yeah.
I think the iPad is a better choice for a 5-year-old. It's smaller.
Durable.
It's durable.
And I don't want to say kid-proof, kid-resistant cases.
Yeah, yeah.
That can help too,
like Gator cases.
Yeah, there's one I looked at that we used to carry that looked like a Gumby, and actually it was like a little cartoon stand-up. That was the eye guy.
Nice.
Yeah, But yeah,
they watch like children's things, and on the mini iPad, can you use your finger to surf around?
Yes.
Yep.
And that's what the other thing that's nice about it. The Mac interface is very simple, very easy to teach a 5 year old. Adults have trouble with it apparently, but 5 year olds get it really quick.
They can master it in moments.
Now the big thing is toddlers are tapping on a piece of paper, waiting for it to turn to the next page.
So they can do, you know, if you set up just the programs that are useful to them. Right, like a couple of kiddie games or you know.
There's a lot of really good stuff geared at kids for learning games. there's even learning to program.
Nice.
Where you're
5 year old is not too young to learn Python.
Swift.
Swift. What I notice is like my child, they look at it once and they learn and remember everything 100 times faster than an adult.
Absolutely. Well, it's a reward thing, right?
Yep.
They know if they click this, they get their Yo Gabba Gabba or whatever the hell kids watch these days.
Or Baby Shark and that type of stuff.
Right. Yeah. So they get that quite immediately and they remember that.
It was Blue's Clues in my children's generation.
Purple Melon. But they learn and remember and retain.
Yep.
Amazing.
Their brains are still plastic.
A little iPad, the small, I don't know
the
what.
Mini, 8.3 inches now.
Yeah.
Or even the previous generation.
That's exactly what we already bought, but I just wanted to double check with you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Have fun, James.
Okay.
And there's a whole section in the App Store designed for kids' games. Kids' apps, not just games, actual learning apps and things like that.
Let me say, this is not a substitute for parent time.
Yeah.
It is not. One thing is, assuming you want your child to learn to read, sit that child on your lap and read them stories. And what my uncle did for me, and I did for my daughter, is I ran my finger along under the words that I was saying in the book so that she got the idea really quickly that what I was saying was related to that thing on the page.
Yeah.
And she learned to read quite early and still reads to this day, which is a beautiful thing.
And it's funny you talk about that, because one of the other biggest things that's my biggest gripe is, I mean, I had my own computer business for a couple decades, you know, and we fixed the computers. But one thing computers have taught us, mainly the kids, not to do is handwriting.
Right.
They should take some time and learn how to write. Because it's so easy to sit there and type and do the autocorrect and everything else. But when you go to get a job application filled out or anything else, a lot of kids to this day cannot do that. They don't know how to write.
Right.
My handwriting was always atrocious to begin with. And now it's gotten worse.
I had excellent handwriting. Now I can't read it. I should be a doctor now. All right. Remember, your computer is not a substitute for parent time. And while you absorb that piece of information, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 29 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. This is my favorite story of the week coming up. In the meantime, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. A team at France's Research Institute of Computer Science and Random Systems, I want to work there,
yes,
developed a novel way to detect malware that does not require software to be installed on the targeted devices. The researchers created a system based on a Raspberry Pi capable of scanning a device for electromagnetic waves using an oscilloscope and an H-field probe. Specific waves signal the presence of malware on the device, with the researchers managing to obtain precise knowledge of malware type and identity. What makes this new technique so impressive is the fact that it requires no modification of the target device or any interaction beyond being able to scan for EM waves, electromagnetic. No software installation means any obfuscation techniques employed by malware writers simply don't work. In fact, obfuscation techniques can also be detected and analyzed. The end result is a system with a malware detection accuracy of 99.82%. which is better than almost every on-system malware detection program, which could prove invaluable to malware analysts. It's also going to prove to be a nightmare for malware writers as they attempt to figure out how to hide their malicious code from an EM scanner without being able to detect its presence. It's not likely we'll be using this technique in the home soon, but you never know. None of the devices used are new technology or difficult to build. Are you ready to detect malware with a wave of your magic wand? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I mean, come on. All it is a Raspberry Pi, an oscilloscope, and an H-field probe. They make those by the millions, all three of them. I don't know how miniaturized you can get them. I've never really paid much attention to that. But they aren't terribly expensive, and they certainly aren't rare or difficult to obtain. So I can see all kinds of companies buying one of these units and wandering around with it. Certainly they can make oscilloscopes and H-field probes small enough to carry easily, and Raspberry Pi already is small enough to carry. So you could wheel this thing around and carry it to somewhere, plug it in, test the machine, plug it in, test the machine, plug it in, test the machine. I can see the roving malware detector becoming a job.
Yeah.
Nowadays, roll up to a desk in your little wagon with pulled by a horse and like tinkers of old. I think that story just absolutely fascinated me. You don't even need software nowadays. And of course, the reason that this is so interesting is because a lot of malware now does obfuscate itself. It hides itself from malware detectors, or it takes over a machine and doesn't allow malware detectors to actually work. It sends them false negatives.
Yep.
Whereas this isn't even connected to the machine in any way. So how do you protect against it? If you're running, you're putting out electromagnetic waves. They can be detected and analyzed by the H probe, H-field probe, and then shown on the oscilloscope. So, it's a pretty cool technology.
There's been some really interesting research shown on similar to that with data exfiltration. On a malware will get into a air-gapped computer. There's always a big thing about secure computers are air-gapped. They're not connected to the internet. But you throw a bunch of flash drives in the parking lot, and someone's going to plug it into a computer to see what's on it.
Yep.
And so you can do ultrasonic malware that will play a sound through the speaker that's above the frequency humans can hear, but your receiver can hear it,
right?
And you can get 10 or 20 bits per second out of it. And
well, there's a program for the Chrome browser called Tone, T-O-N-E, And what it does is it lets you send a URL from one machine to another by sound.
Yep.
And so if you can send a URL, you can send pretty much anything. Again, as Steve says, it's not quick, but of course it doesn't have to be for a URL.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, you know, that's not going to be a big thing. But it has its own protocol. They connect, they handshake, it sends the thing, they say, I got it, they disconnect, you're done. It's called Tone, T-O-N-E, and it's in the Chrome store.
Yep. I posted a link.
Yeah. It's a very cool, little program.
It won't run on my Safari.
It won't run on Safari. It will run on Chrome.
Yep.
The Chrome OS. And it's used a lot in Chromebooks. I know a number of people, I've been to places where you can hear all over the room because people are sending URLs to each other through Tone. So, it's a pretty cool thing. Yeah. You would find it works very much like the programs where I can from my Android phone or my iPhone, I can send another Android phone or iPhone some information.
Apple has AirDrop between Apple devices.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
So you can, it's a similar concept, but it was originally designed in the days when you didn't have peer-to-peer connectivity.
Yeah.
And it let you share files without that. So one of the things Chromebook does is not particularly want you to have peer-to-peer connectivity so that you don't connect to malicious other machines anywhere. But Tone lets you just send out those files without that.
Yep. It's kind of like the old spy movies where you have the giant parabolic dish pointing at the window hoping to catch someone to talk. And then they went to lasers so you can bounce a laser beam off. There was a research paper on potato chip bags. So they were able to bounce a laser off a potato chip bag sitting in a room and pick up like 80% of the conversation in that room.
The thing that really fascinates me, and I've seen students do this, you can run a program on your phone, set it on the desk, and it will interpret the desk motions of the person next to you typing with about 90% accuracy.
Get out.
Catch what they're typing.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Yeah, the rhythm and cadence.
And how strong it is.
How do they know which letter?
How strong it is tells you which side of the keyboard it's on. And then the rest of it is algorithms.
Maybe pattern matching on how common letters are in words.
Yeah, right.
Start with that.
Yeah.
Some of those apps started out as like a seismograph. I had one, in fact, it's still around here somewhere, probably 20 years ago, where the USGS put out this app that you can install on your computers because there were fall detection circuits in your computer.
Yep.
If your computer starts falling, your hard drive spins down. So there's a motion detection
in it. Like a gyroscope.
Yeah. And so then they expanded that to be detecting earthquakes because seismographs are expensive. So it was basically crowdsourcing seismographs.
Brilliant idea, honestly.
Yeah, so to really pinpoint where earthquakes are. And it was really cool watching it just tapping on the desk and seeing how much movement the computer could detect with just a simple tap on your desk.
Yeah, and you can. It's about... They say 85% accurate, maybe 90. Depends on the.
Okay.
Obviously, it depends partly on how hard you type and what computer you have and how close you are to the other person. But I've seen, I've seen people in computer labs. They go in, they sit down, they put a book on one side, they put their phone on the other side. Now you take a look at that innocent little phone sitting there and saying, "You son of a gun."
Yep.
I'm not typing now. I'm just not. I'm not going to put my password in.
Yeah.
I'll use voice dictation. That's better.
That's better. Well, and that's a thing. You know, I have fairly severe arthritis. And the days like, today,
mm-hmm.
When it's
just... Minus 16 chill factor.
Yeah. I can't type for any length of time before my hands just turn into claws. But I have things I'm writing and things I have to get done. And certainly, like I've said many times, I use Google Docs up on the Google Cloud to do stuff. And there is a voice dictation system in that. And it is excellent, particularly when I'm wearing a headphone.
Yeah.
But even without that, even when I do it right here at the Chromebook, it is excellent. And I've done an awful lot of writing with my hands tucked into my armpits trying to warm up my joints. But still working away, getting done what I got to get done.
How far that has come in such a short time.
Yeah, I remember the early days of Dragon Dictate when you thought to yourself, this is not worth it. I'm spending more time editing than I am talking.
Because all you had to do was, you know, you train it once, and then all of a sudden, if you came down with a cold or, you know, a sinus infection or whatever, and your voice is off a little, it didn't recognize you. It's like you had to retrain it, and it's like, this is worth it. But look at your smartphones now. You can sit there and, you know, say the command.
I rarely type anything on my phone anymore. I voice command everything. Yeah. I've told this story before. We had at Cider, an apple cider meeting at the school. I cannot remember who it is. I wish I could. We had somebody who had one of the very early voice command systems on an Apple II. And they brought in the Apple II and a lamp and a radio and something else, a record player maybe. I forget what it was. And they spent the whole day tuning the thing. I mean, we were there hours early. And they would say, computer, and the computer would say, yes, master. And they would say, turn on the lamp. And the computer would say, turn on the lamp, master. And they would say, yes. And the lamp would go on. Great. It worked perfectly. We were all ready. People came in, filled up the auditorium. And the acoustics changed in the room.
Yep.
And I felt so bad for this person. Computer? Nothing. Computer? Nothing. Computer? Yes, master? Turn on the lamp. Turn on the radio, master? No! And the radio would go on. It was just, you know, it was, again, such early days and all that. Now, you can control all of that. You can buy for $29. You can buy a smart plug it into your wall, and tell Google or Alexa to turn on the lights and turn on the radio and turn on the television and you know, everything. We've come so far with voice commands. The problem with voice commands, of course, is that they are public. So you do not want to use any of that in a coffee shop anywhere. You don't want to use that in a cubicle farm.
What was your call mom story in the classroom?
Oh, yes. Back in the very early days of iPhones, when everybody had Siri, obviously, at the end of a class, everybody would stand up and pick up their phones to go out in the hall and talk. I was always adamant about, if your phone rings during my class, you flunk. If you make a call during my class, you flunk.
Yeah.
But people would stand up and take out their iPhones, and at least twice a semester, somebody in the back of the room would yell, Siri, call mom! Which probably just happened to a whole bunch of machines. I apologize. But kids would suddenly be answering the phone. No, mom, everything's fine. How are you, Ma? I just thought I'd...
Oh, can you send me $100?
Yeah, right.
Well, I've got you on the phone.
While you're on the phone.
No, I didn't call just to ask for money.
Yeah.
Not just to ask for money.
Just to ask for money. One time my daughter was at college, she sent me a text message. Did you know you could send me money through Google Pay? Yes, honey, I did. I did know that. How much money do you need? it does be, you're right, Janet, it does beat the clapper.
Lights
on. Clap off.
The clapper. And you can do all of that now. My father-in-law had a lamp set up in such a way that if you touch the base of the lamp,
yep,
just anywhere on
they
the base.
They still do.
Yeah, it would go on.
Heck, they got faucets like that now.
Yeah.
Delta makes a faucet. You just put your hand up to it, tap it, and it turns on. Or you could give it voice commands. Hey, you know, whatever. Fill a pitcher with so much water. They've done advertisements of
that. Yeah, give me 2 pints of water because that's what my recipe calls for.
Or the dog dish. I love that one.
Yeah.
So-and-so, fill the dog dish.
Yep. Yep.
Because the dog's barking at him that he wants more water. That reminded me of my dog, my one Westie. I mean, we had she had a wooden, a metal dish. And when it got down low, if we didn't pay attention to when it was empty, she'd go over and tap it. You know, give it a tap with the side of her paw. If you ignored her, I don't know how the dog did it. I'd never, in all the years, the dog lived to be 15, never figured out how she did it. But if we ignored the tap, she'd give you a few minutes. And then she'd go over, hit the dish, and it would go flying up in the air, flipping over. And we go, I think she needs water.
Our cats will do that we have a water dish in the upstairs bathroom, too. And they... If it gets too low, they'll knock it in front of the door.
Nice.
So in the middle of the night when you're trying to go to the bathroom, you trip over the stupid dish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
All right, cat, I'll fill up that water right now.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, ours is very – we have two. And one of them is quite nonchalant about it. The other one, you know, she's one of those cats that if you can see just the tiniest bit of the bottom of the food dish –
mm-hmm.
She's about to die of starvation.
Oh,
they never feed me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Melt away to nothing.
Yeah. She will sit there and stare at you. If you ignore her, she comes over. She's by the dish.
Okay.
If you ignore her, she comes over and sits right by you and stares. And if you ignore that, she jumps up on you and stares. And if you ignore that, the claws come out.
Well, that's where, again, some folks have gotten, for their pets and all that, feeding dishes that they can sit there and refill just by voice commands.
And those can be connected to your home automation.
Yeah.
Your smart speaker system.
Because,
so you can say, Alaska, fill the...
Yeah, you forget to do it or the water dish or anything else and, keep it fresh and all that for them.
So. Then you lose internet and they die because they don't get fed.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, my three dogs wouldn't. They could survive a couple days.
Yeah, so could mine.
I think most pets could, really.
Yeah. What's the story, dog? Dogs are loyal. If you died, the dog would lay down next to you and die too, but your cat would just feast on your remains.
Exactly. Yeah, I have no compunctions. Our cats.
Did you watch Discovery? Star Trek Discovery?
I have started it.
There's this. You know about the cat?
No.
The cat. The cat.
I have not gotten to the cat yet.
Brooks' cat yet. It's the fourth season already. The cat was in like the second season.
I'm in the first season.
Okay. So there's a scene with a cat.
Okay.
And these aliens ask about the cat because you didn't tell me there were three life forms in your ship. So, it's a domesticated cat. Well, do you love her? Well, yeah. And does she love you? And the two people look at each other and say, no.
No, absolutely not.
But she's a queen. Oh, and they get all nuts because you've got royalty trapped on your ship. No, that's not what I meant.
Right.
Grunt. It's a Maine Coon. Monstrous, monstrous cat.
We got two cats out of the same litter, but obviously the mother was a bit promiscuous. Cats can have kittens from multiple parents.
Multiple fathers.
Multiple fathers, right. But one of them is an orange tabby. The other one is clearly part Maine Coon.
Yep.
She's enormous, looks like a Maine Coon, and has a Maine Coon temperament. To put it as mildly as possible.
Yeah, that's being polite.
Yeah. I just posted a Facebook picture yesterday of her. She was dipping into the nip. And she was lying on her back with this grin on her face. Hysterical.
Talking like this, it kind of reminds me, right now, because it is a minus 16 now, and most folks are staying home. And that, you've heard us folks talk for quite a few years about taking the time to sit there and set stuff up as far as the backups and doing scans and everything else. Well, let's face it, tomorrow's not going to get much better. We're expecting up to 12 inches of snow. So I think a lot of folks between football and everything else where you're doing that, take the time. It's a perfect opportunity. You're in where it's warm, you're safe. Take the time to sit at your computer and start doing the virus scans, setting up the spyware programs, doing your backups. And the other key thing, can't stress it enough, is do some type of password protection program.
You don't want to have to remember all those passwords, but you need to have different passwords on every site.
This is the perfect time. Like I say, you don't have to worry about, oh, going out into the backyard to go do this project or that project. For the most part, you're going to be in for the next 24 hours easily with right. the snow coming. I mean, like I said, they're saying a foot. You're not going to go out there and shovel until it's done anyways. So take this opportunity. It's a perfect time to focus just on that, and then that way you're set for the year. You set those up to automatically say, do the scans and do the scans for spyware and malware because you paid for the program and it's relatively cheap. And setting it up to automatically back up your stuff to another drive. And then setting up NPass. Or one of your other favorite programs, you won't regret it down the road. That way, if something happens, you can sit back and say, oh, yeah, I've already got that covered.
And if you're talking about backups, take a look at the top link at Soundbites. It says you don't have enough backups, and there's a list of many, many programs. Some of them are free. My suggestion is always to get one of the paid programs because they will automate the backup for you so you don't ever have to think about it again.
Like we've said, you're getting what you pay for.
That's exactly right.
You know, you buy cheap, you're going to get cheap.
I use pCloud. I've said that before. I have it. My wife has it. And it's it backs up everything. It's great. But there are lots of them there. And pick one that matches your needs and budget, but make sure you've got one that automates because you're human and that's okay, but you will forget.
Yeah. And like I said, this is a perfect opportunity to do it because you can't go out and do much.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
So, you know, take the opportunity while you have it because, like you say, you hear us week after week say, back up, or do a password program because folks, and I know Steve runs into it, too. People come bring their computer in, and they go, what's your password? Huh? I have a password. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, you do.
But never asked me for it.
Yeah.
Because you haven't done anything that needs passwords yet.
Yeah.
Since you set the computer up 10 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. To automatically do it, and it doesn't do it, and now all of a sudden it needs it.
And now we need your favorite band to reset your password, because that was your security question when you set it up.
10 years ago,
yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't care if your musical tastes have changed now. What was your favorite band 10 years ago?
Yeah.
And look, if you're one of those people who puts...
For the first 20 years, I probably could remember my best friend from high school, but 30 years later, 40 years later, I don't know.
and if you're one of those people who keeps all your passwords in a notebook, cross out the ones you're no longer using.
And when you go through and they don't work, cross them out so you stop trying them the next time.
That's exactly right. Save yourself a little time and effort. Get a password manager, NPass, LastPass, any one of those. Get a password manager. Then you only ever have to remember one password, the one that gets you into your password manager.
If you only use Apple devices and Apple's keychain is built in, you're already using it, whether you realize it or not. Whenever Safari says, do you want to save the password, that's the keychain. It's saving it for you.
One other key thing is when you set that up, and if you have a significant other, tell them the master password because God forbid if anything happens to you and they need to get into, say, bank accounts or anything else that you were working on, they can do it.
Apple just added, I'm trying to remember what they call it, a legacy something or other, where you can have another password and assign to another person. So, like, if you pass, then your spouse can get into your accounts and get your stuff.
Right. All right, that's it. That music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank every single one of you who called in. Look, people, we'll be back next week. We're done now. I know that's sad, but we'll be back next week with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It's 59 minutes after the hour. You have been listening to the longest running computer show in the entire known universe. That's right. It's Soundbites right here on the Truly Great, and truly grateful to you that with your continued generous support, we stay on the air because we are member supported. Jazz 90.1. Stay warm, stay safe, stay healthy, and we will see you in just 166 hours.
This is 90.1 WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District.